We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrandt. That guy over there, the one, the only, the incomparable Dan Rubenstein. Thank you for joining us on this week two reaction show. It's always the quiet ones, Dan, isn't it?
It's become cliche at this point, but yes, it looked like, okay, we have Oregon, Ohio State, we have Iowa, Iowa State, you know, we have some interesting matchups, but nothing that's wall-to-wall action. And here we are with chaos.
We do this every Sunday. Every Sunday that follows what is supposed to be an otherwise quiet college football weekend.
And then cats start hanging from rafters.
We'll get to that.
And then as soon as we think it's going to be a ho-hum quiet weekend, a feline interloper happens upon the Miami App State game.
That was the highlight of the game.
Yeah, probably.
It was the highlight of the game. We'll get into that and much, much more. We're going to play your reverbs here momentarily. We appreciate the support of the Verballerhood for those of you who are watching along at home. This live stream is available to premium Verballers out on our Patreon, which, again, you can find at verballers.com. Yeah, what a weekend, Dan, huh? We had five ranked teams in total go down. That includes two teams in the top 10. There were a number of other really close matchups. There was, of course, the Florida State game, which we'll get into how that ended, and just a whole bunch of other stuff that definitely upended at least what I thought of the college football landscape, going into the weekend. But before we go any further, let's put together your reverbs. Again, 408-VERBAL-1 was the phone number. We had calls deep into the night. Some calls coming through as I was downloading other calls.
I'm picturing you at a switchboard like, please hold Verballers, please hold Verballers, please hold Verballers.
It was something like that. It was a very, very busy weekend, and Dylan did a good job, an admirable job cutting those messages together. Here's what we got. Week two, reverbs. Have a listen.
Hey, SEC, it's Coach Stark here. Listen, I know we already accepted your invitation to join the SEC, but I hate to say it, but something's come up and we're just not going to be able to make it.
Hey, Dan and Ty, Jared from Baltimore, Maryland here.
Hey, guys, this is Alex from Scranton, Pennsylvania.
Hi, this is Billy from Tomball, Texas.
Hey, this is Party Pat in the Pacific Northwest.
Hi, Meg from Columbus, Ohio.
Hey, guys, this is Will in Minnesota calling.
Hey, Dan and Ty, it's Daniel calling from Kunsan Air Base, South Korea. I just finished watching the Ducks hold down the lines of scrimmage better than we're holding down the DMV. Go Ducks, baby!
I really hope that after the Oregon Ducks just defeated on the road the Ohio State Buckeyes, that the great Dan Rubenstein pours himself not one, not two, but perhaps three martinis.
Now this is exciting, guys. We can finally determine exactly how talented Kayvon Thibodeau truly is. He's so powerful that even if he only stands near the field during the game, the Oregon Ducks win. And you know, you just can't coach that.
Tell me, Ohio State, do you bleed?
Pretty sure that once Joe Moorhead leaves coaching, he has a future as Santa Claus.
I know you're supposed to win your clunkers, but Toledo, really? Toledo is Notre Dame's clunker?
My joy at seeing Dan's Oregon Ducks take down the Buckeyes was short-lived by watching the Jack Cone of Shame in the South Bend game.
Excuse me, I gotta clear my throat so I can sing. Gotta win your clunkers. Love the Notre Dame.
Hey, Micah, what was the score of the OU game up until minute 30 left?
0-69.
Apparently Kenny Pickett changed his last name to Heisman. Hail the Pitt, baby. Let's go.
Calling in after the South Carolina game, and all I gotta say is win your clunkers. Zebulon Nolan did not quite look like as solid of a quarterback, and maybe that's why he was a GA prior to the year, but 20-17, Shane Beamer is undefeated. Go Cox.
Son of a Beamer! The pirate ship has sunk!
In two games, the Georgia Bulldogs defense has scored more points than the opponents. Should I be worried that I'm starting to get hopeful as a Georgia fan? Go Dogs.
Is there another quarterback controversy at Georgia? Stetson Bennett, 10 of 12, 288 yards and 5 touchdowns. Is JT Daniels watching his back?
Dan, Ty, do you know what's better than Applebee's on a date night? An Ohio State loss and a Penn State win. We are.
And I am so excited about my Iowa Hawkeyes. Iowa State was hoping to party like Brock stars. Instead, they hit Brock bottom. Let's go,
oh,
Hawks,
no.
Baby.
Wow.
I'm pretty sure Brock Purdy just threw another pick. So repeat after me. Iowa State is not that good.
Looks like my Aggies found a definitive answer for, is the backup better than the starter? Win your clunkers, baby. 2-0, Giga Mags.
You win, period. Your period. Clunkers, exclamation point. Gigamags, holy moly, I am stressed.
Disgusting, 2-0, baby. Giggle.
Guess who just got murdered?
Woo Pig. Hogs are running wild in the Arkansas backwoods tonight.
Hey, Texas, are you sure you really want to go to the SEC? Because you really are playing like you don't.
You were wrong about my Arkansas Razorbacks. 40-21 in Fayetteville. I don't think Texas is ready for the SEC, baby. Sam Pittman for president.
Is the Big 12 losing Texas? Or are they upgrading to Cincinnati?
O-H-N-O!
Oh, no. Yeah, there you go. A little bit longer than usual, but
yeah.
Our footballers had a lot they had to get off their chest, Dan. What a week.
Correct.
What a week for you as our resident Oregon alum and faithful here on the Solid Verbal.
What a week for you, by the way.
No,
what a week
we're
for
not
you.
Talking about
Hold
me.
On.
We're talking
Hold
about you.
On.
We're talking about the joy that was the Oregon win on the road in the horseshoe.
Yeah.
You know, if we don't want to talk about Notre Dame, that's fine. I'm okay with it. I'm sure you'd be okay with it. If we do,
no,
we'll talk about that later in the show.
We must.
Okay. Let's talk about the Oregon win. Oregon goes on the road. They're in the horseshoe. They were a 14 and a half point dog going into that game. And what was the storyline as we did our preview? The storyline, at least from my standpoint, was Ohio State is too many dudes. Oregon looked like crap against Fresno. Anthony Brown has a lot of cleanup work to do. He may not be the guy. Kayvon Thibodeau might be out. Like all these things that seemingly were going against the Oregon Ducks. And then they go into that game, and it was almost like a completely different team. And I saw, if people didn't see, go on out to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/TheSolidVerbal. And you can see Dan's immediate post-game reaction, which was very emotional. And you were almost without words, Dan. Walk me through what the hell happened here. So Oregon won. Oregon won the game. They absorbed some major passing yardage from C.J. Stroud, who I know Ohio State fans may be somewhat down on because he did miss some big opportunities and obviously threw a pick that helped to seal things at the end. But he still threw for almost 500 yards on a very talented, albeit beat up, notably up front defense. And that's what you should do if you're an excellent quarterback. And yes, he missed spots, whatever. And Chris Olave is probably the best receiver in college football, at least right now. So what Oregon did is they won emphatically up front. They David Pollocked Ohio State without Justin Flo, who led the team in tackles last week, a five-star first-year starter at linebacker. He was hurt all of last year. And obviously without Kayvon Thibodeau, who was a 50-50 going into the game kind of thing, but couldn't go. And he was their gravitational player defensively that requires so much attention from every offensive line. Oregon won on both sides of the ball. They beat Ohio State up on the ground. We saw those plays where, you know, a wide receiver, a tight end would sort of smash a linebacker, and both Travis Dye and C.J. Verdell had scoring plays basically untouched. A leading offensive lineman, a leading blocker was untouched as well certain points. And so what Joe Moorhead was able to do against the Ohio State defense.
Man, Holmes, I told whatever. You about Jomo against Ohio State. I told you.
Well, I mean, Penn State fans were also saying, beware of Jomo packing it in the fourth quarter, though, at the same time. There was that element to it as well. And so, you know, I was ecstatic when Oregon hired Joe Moorhead. I was just worried about the pairing with Anthony Brown. And we even saw, as good a performance from Anthony Brown as we could have hoped, but that also includes almost no bigger stretching plays to wide receivers. There were big passes and big moments to tight ends. Obviously, he hit C.J. Verdell with passes that kept drives going, you know, third and sixes that, you know, extended the play or moved the chains. But really, it was a story of Oregon with a very specific game plan that didn't, and they took a couple shots to receivers deep, but that's not what Anthony Brown necessarily succeeds doing. He doesn't necessarily have that touch in that game. So I thought Joe Moorhead, I thought the game plan was excellent. And I largely thought the game plan was pretty sound from Ohio State. They just missed a couple of shots. And you saw that fourth and one stop from Noah Sewell in a big moment. I thought Oregon's run fits on defense, especially given how beat up they were, down a couple linebackers. They had to move a freshman safety to linebacker. They were playing a walk-on linebacker in the second half in a huge game. Like, they were really down on defense. And I thought the focus and ready-to-play-edness, not an adjective, was outstanding. And we were on Big Boy Bets. Jeff Schwartz mentioned that he was taking the points just because Oregon is not demonstrably worse than anybody in these huge spots, maybe outside of like a fully weaponized Alabama, but we haven't seen it. But this is an Ohio State team with a new starting quarterback, with a defense that we've seen the last couple of years, or last year specifically, show itself to be more vulnerable. I was watching that game thinking, thank God Chase Young is not lining up today. Thank God the timing worked out.
Yeah.
Because Ohio State really couldn't get to Anthony Brown. I thought Oregon's offensive line did a really good job in both phases. And there were some penalties that were sort of, I don't know how angry Ohio State fans are over that Chris Olave non-call PI in the end zone. It didn't really look like he made an attempt at the ball. To me, it looked like he was trying to sell a flop. Ohio State had its opportunities. Ohio State down two touchdowns in the second half had me thinking. I was texting with our pal Ari Wasserman. 65-35, Ohio State wins this game. Yeah. Because I'm just not confident if Anthony Brown has to drive the field and needs seven to convert for Oregon. I just was not confident in that moment. But Oregon came out of it making big plays in big moments and coming up with stops. And obviously that interception was pretty much the dagger there. But yeah, Oregon on the ground went with what worked. We saw the explosive touchdown from C.J. Verdell early on in the second half. And they hung on. To me, it was a hang on performance of upper magnitude.
Yeah.
And came away quite impressed with the performance on the road.
Yeah, you'll take it in the horseshoe.
Yeah.
Ohio State, I agree, definitely softer on defense than you would hope for if you are a Buckeyes fan. We'll see how they try to fix that situation moving forward. But Oregon came in with a really good game plan. They looked solid. They were especially potent on the ground, and they were able to stave off that late effort from Ohio State to try and get back in this thing. You mentioned CJ Stroud. We got to play the sound, right?
Please.
484, three touchdowns and a pick in a losing effort. So he did all he could. He did miss some throws, much like he did last week. And Joel Klatt mentioned it on the broadcast. C.J. Stroud had a tendency to be high and long on some of his throws. And,
yeah,
you know, I think he's a good quarterback. He looks very comfortable in the pocket. He will eventually get that tuned in. There's a very crowded quarterback room at Ohio State. I don't know if that creates any controversy.
500 yards nearly against a pretty good Oregon defense. Yeah.
So big win for Oregon on the road again, 35-28. They emerge from week two as an undisputed Pac-12/playoff contender. We'll see where it goes from here.
On to Stony Brook. That 1-0 against Stony Brook. That's all we're concerned about here, Ty. That's all we're concerned about.
All right. Moving on. Let's go to the Cy-Hawk game, man. A little bit farther west over in Ames, Iowa. 27-17. The Iowa Hawkeyes again take this trophy home. Matt Campbell is now 0-5 against Kirk Ferentz. Iowa has won the last six meetings between these two teams. And they won this game despite having 173 total yards of offense, which, by the way, is perfect for this game. I can't even put into words how perfect it is that they scored 27 points on 173 total yards. The real story, though, was the mistakes, right? The mistakes on the Iowa State side. Four turnovers, none for Iowa. Through two games this season, Iowa's plus +9. In turnover differential, it's really just a style of play that Kirk Ferentz wants to play. It's a lot of short fields. It's ball control. It's not shooting yourself in the foot. That has been a problem now through 2 weeks. And you could argue as far back as we've seen Brock Purdy, that we constantly have these moments where he's really, really, really good until he's not. In this one, he was benched in the fourth quarter because he just wasn't great through three picks. Breece Hall, you know, all world, everything. Breece Hall probably going to be the top running back selected, I would assume, in the draft, if not the top, one of the top. Fumbles deep inside on his own territory. Scoop and score opportunity for Iowa as they run it in from 6 yards away. So one of those deals where if you're an Iowa State fan, you look at it and say, oh man, we committed so many mistakes here. We really shot ourselves in the foot. We could have won the game. If you're Iowa, you come out of this saying, look, we told you this is who we are. We know exactly who we are. And the streak continues, 6 in a row.
Yeah, I mean, you nailed it. I mean, do you know anybody who gives themselves a nickname when they're drinking a lot? Like, if you have a friend named Steve that, like, oh, Steve's cool, but you don't want to hang out with Hank. And Hank is who Steve is with too many, a completely different personality. I have a friend like that. You've met him. I used to work with him. Robbie becomes Derek.
Derek, okay? Well, Derek. You're talking about a Frank the Tank scenario from old school.
Yeah, where you're sort of not mild-mannered, but just very different. There is something about that to Brock Purdy. Brock Purdy's a good quarterback, but Brock Purdy has an alter ego who can make mistakes and try for a little bit too much in bigger spots and gets Iowa State in. I don't know if it's Break Purdy. I don't know if that's too mean, but I don't know. I came away thinking Iowa is a perfectly built team to beat a team like Iowa State that... forcing mistakes, not allowing big plays, and a team that even if Spencer Petras, which has always been the case, has like 2.5 great throws a game in him, and you better make it count. And he, I think, was it Charlie Jones who kind of emerged on that great touchdown catch? That's Iowa's game. And they turn stops and they turn turnover, a big turnover, into points. And it's nearly impossible to come back from. And we've talked about this before with Iowa State's offense, not necessarily built around generating bigger plays, not necessarily having the guys gravitationally to really make Iowa pay all over the field, that they're going to nickel and dime teams. Yeah. And it works a lot of the time. They've got that strong running back in Breece Hall. They've got interesting playmakers, especially at tight end. But in terms of what Iowa State's able to do in terms of popping big ones, it's going to hurt them against teams built like Iowa. And so Iowa's certainly going to lose a game in which they're not able to generate shorter fields because, what, Tyler Goodson didn't do much in terms of pacing this win. No. Spencer Petras didn't do much except, I mean, that was an amazing throw up the middle, up the seam for a touchdown. And so if teams don't give the ball back in advantageous position to Iowa, Iowa can be beaten by a quote-unquote lesser team. But Iowa State... especially on Saturday. They just weren't that team. I was impressed with the backup later on. Deckers,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, he was fine. And look, you can go back as far as the preseason. Matt Campbell made comments about Brock Purdy and how he doesn't know where this Frank the Tank, Derek alter ego streak comes from. But he wondered if maybe it was because early on in his tenure as Iowa State quarterback, he had to do a lot more individually to try and move the team down the field. He wasn't surrounded by as much talent as he is now. I don't know what it is, but this is a recurring theme.
And I think really his receivers were better early, though. I think his receivers were definitely better in terms of what of Tariq Milton. I'm trying to remember all the names, but I think he grew used to that and felt without that he has to do more.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but it's definitely a thing, and it definitely came back to bite them in this one. Again, they lose 27-17. Big win for Iowa.
I still think, by the way, the Clones are going to have a really nice season.
They are.
A really good season. They're built, especially that defense. I mean, the defense performed so admirably at home in that big emotional rivalry spot. It's the mistakes. It's the forcing. And these are all very obvious observations.
Yeah.
But it needs to be very quickly cleaned up or we will be seeing a different quarterback.
Speaking of needed cleanup with some urgency, shall we talk about the Notre Dame game now? Do you want to do that?
Wow. Yeah, sure. Absolutely. I mean, here's the big broad theme that I think we should have touched on early. We don't know how good for 96% of teams. We don't know how good they are or how bad they are or what their ceiling might be or what their floor looks like if things don't go right. We don't know. It's post week two. We have a better idea after week two, especially if teams have played two relatively decent opponents. But like, we think Notre Dame is a quality team because they have a track record of being a quality team, but things change and coordinators change and quarterbacks change and are getting hurt. Like, there are all these elements that define teams in September. And so, yes, Notre Dame beating Toledo the way that they did should be seen as disappointing on a certain level.
Oh, it is. Look, I mean, there was a moment in the fourth quarter. I'm sitting there. I'm watching this game all by my lonesome because Kate knows better. Just leave me be. I'm okay.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there all by myself. I'm drinking a Trogs Perpetual IPA, not a sponsor.
Stealing a broadcast. Continue.
And I'm watching another defensive meltdown late. And it occurred to me that I stopped watching the show Billions for the same reason.
Oh, man. Same. Oh, man. Did I enjoy like Finance Entourage until I didn't?
Every episode was basically the same.
Mm-hmm.
And it took a while for me to realize that. Maybe it took me two games to realize that for Notre Dame. But I'm a little worried. I'm a little worried that we're going to get into the Billions territory very quickly here with the Notre Dame defense. I thought at the start of the season, it would be reversed and that the defense would be shouldering the load for the offense as it tried to find its way with a new quarterback and some new faces on the line and et cetera, et cetera. In reality, it's been reversed. Notre Dame in this game struggled to get separation pretty much the whole way. Toledo, as a defense, I thought did a really good job. They contained the Irish offense. It was a one-score game from wire to wire. 1:35 left, I think it was. Toledo's quarterback, their backup, Daquan Finn, runs it in from 26 yards out. Gives them a 29-24 lead. Notre Dame gets the ball back. They score within 24 seconds. Jack Cohn, a nice throw to Kevin Austin, a couple penalties. Jack Cohn dislocates his finger. I don't know if you saw that. His finger. He's running to the sidelines. I'm doing this on video, kind of like holding up his hand with his other hand. As goes over the trainer. The trainer pops it in. He comes back. He immediately throws a nice touchdown across the seam to Michael Mayer, which ends up being the game winner, 32-29. So you got to understand the full context here. It was a nice series by Jack Cohn, but much of this game was actually dominated by the storyline of whether it should be Jack Cohn or Tyler Buchner in at quarterback. Cohn, for his part, was fine, but he did throw a pick six. There was another turnover. And we knew going into this game, it was kind of an open secret that Tyler Buchner was going to get some work. What we didn't expect is that he would look as dynamic as he ended up looking. 3 for 3 passing. Passing wasn't the story for him, though. Kid's got wheels, man. He can run. And that's in stark contrast to Cohn, who's kind of a statue back there. Which is fine. That's not his game. But Buchner coming in definitely provided a spark on the offense that had pretty much every Notre Dame fan, I'd have to say 97% of Notre Dame fans watching that game or watching Buckner saying, yeah, we could take more of that moving forward. I'd be okay with more of that in the rest of our games this season. But Cone comes in. Cone got the job done when he had to. That was the headliner. The real worrying part, frankly, was the fact that the Notre Dame defense, again, gave up a bunch of explosion plays. I saw Pete Sampson tweeted out that Notre Dame now has given up plays of 60 or more yards or more plays of 60 or more yards in the past two games than Clark Lee did in the last three seasons. That's a problem. The Marcus Freeman system maybe is a little bit more boom or bust, but a little too much bust through two games against Florida
State. Wait, did a Notre Dame DB get caught looking at his wristband while a receiver ran by him? Because Oregon survived that, and that was not a pleasant replay to watch.
Yeah. So they got to clean that up. That Brian Kelly, in his post-game comments, didn't call for anyone's execution this time, which is nice.
Oh, look at that. But step forward.
He definitely acknowledged that they know there's a problem on defense. They think they know how to fix it. New faces, et cetera, et cetera. The other thing on Notre Dame's side, which is actually more worrying, is the offensive line's kind of a mess right now. And there are some new faces that they've rotated in. They've had some injuries up front, but they just seem out of sync. And with all the talk in the preseason about how they're going to run the crap out of the ball. And look, Kyron Williams is fine. Chris Tyree was really effective out of the backfield. They're going to find a way to get those guys involved.
Mm-hmm.
The line is questionable at best right now. So a couple weeks before they get into the real teeth of that schedule, they're going to need to get that part sorted out. Because as they go up against better defensive fronts, that's definitely going to be a thing. But look, win your clunkers. You say it, right? Win your clunkers.
Win your clunkers. Notre Dame down late. Yeah.
Did not expect Toledo to be one of those clunkers, but that was the story of week two, wasn't it?
Yeah. I was going to say readjust your expectations, but you probably also know what happened with the USC game and with what North Carolina looked like in week one against Virginia Tech. So I don't know what you need to readjust in terms of Notre Dame. I just think we should all grow to appreciate this new budding rivalry that the sport has to offer in Notre Dame Toledo, because we have the Houston Rockets really down. And so there's a space, there's a vacuum for a new Rocket team to ascend. And with what Notre Dame and Toledo are doing back and forth, there's like new bad blood. There's like a big rivalry energy there. I'm excited. I'm excited to see what the future holds for these two.
Yeah. How dare you? Let's move on. Let's go to Arkansas 40, Texas 21.
Now, guess who just got murdered?
So look.
Hold on. Allow me. I get to say it. I believe. One side of this show was pounding Texas since like 2003 in this matchup.
How do you feel about yourself? How do you feel about yourself being such a Texas neophyte?
I just enjoyed looking up the best hot dog places for these home dogs. I'm sure at some point we're going to get into Mississippi State, NC State. You doubt the Hogs and this is what you get. This is what you get. The karma that you threw into the universe was unpleasant for you, I suppose.
Yeah, there were no two ways about this game.
Mm-hmm.
Arkansas freaking dominated. They dominated. 333 yards rushing. Four separate ball carriers had touchdowns. The Hogs only punted twice on their very first two possessions. From that point forward, they scored every time they had the ball. The only exception was when they threw a pick later in the game. But it was 33-7 at halftime. 33-7 at the end of the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
By halftime, Arkansas had already asserted its dominance. Defensively, they played really well as well. They held Texas 250 some odd yards. Hudson Card was 8 of 15 with a QBR of 15.2, which is not good if you're wondering what the QBR is.
Yeah.
Casey Thompson came in, looked a little better, I guess, but at that point it was sort of garbage time. This is a statement win for Sam Pittman. It was a big deal for that Arkansas program to get the win at home in Fayetteville.
Definitely.
Steve Sarkisian kind of alluded to the fact they didn't see this type of performance coming from his Texas squad. I thought they looked good a week ago against Louisiana. Of course, what naturally came as a result of this game were the calls that you heard on the reverbs. People dialing in saying, you sure you want to join the SEC? You sure you want to do that? Arkansas looked really good, Dan. I don't know what else to say. They looked really, really good, and Texas definitely has some cleanup that they got to do before week three.
Yeah, I don't know how much cleanup can be done. I mean, we saw the struggles tackling last year, and it's a lot of those same players struggling. And look, listen, I think Arkansas is a pretty good team. I think if you look at, and I'm trying to remember who, it might have been Dennis Dodd, somebody tweeted it out, that what Barry Odom has done against the very best quarterbacks and some of the most talented players, that like last year, Mac Jones and Devontae Smith were really held down. Now, I think Alabama ran all over Arkansas last year, but in terms of game planning against quarterbacks, and we talked about this going into the show, Barry Odom has done a tremendous job. And what Arkansas has done up front, especially on offense, in opening up those lanes, they had three guys just running all over, including quarterback KJ Jefferson, who is a load, who is an absolute load. And I think he's going to continue to evolve as a passer. But in these situations, I thought the game plan and the execution and the adjustments that Arkansas made on offense were terrific, just keeping things on the ground. And then what Texas was not able to do on offense, and we saw big moments come and go, and we saw Hudson Card overthrowing dudes, and there was a fourth and one where, as far as I'm concerned, until you prove that short yardage is a gimme for your offense in power formations, try a little more than running back left, running back right up the gut, because Arkansas saw it coming from a mile away and sent their linebackers and just demolished Bijan Robinson in that big spot. Sark has now done that, been a part of that. Now, it was a bigger stage against Texas for USC way back when, but it can't happen. It can't happen. You have to prove yourself to have the ability to give your team the best chance to win. And Sark was at least partially responsible in the way that offense folded against Arkansas. And Texas will improve. They will get better. This is, you know, these are players that Sark largely didn't recruit. I think they will get better at receiver. You know, whoever ends up starting at quarterback in the long term will get more comfortable in this offense and more comfortable with his receivers. But the story to me is just Arkansas, with how strong they looked up front on both sides of the ball, just basically a year in, or even whatever you want to count, with Sam Pittman having, you know, 2020 as his year one. Couldn't have been more impressed. Don't know what Arkansas's ceiling is, but they're not going to be destroyed by anybody, and they're going to give everybody their best shot, which is more than you could have said a few years ago. So really pumped to see what the future holds for the Hogs.
No, it was a good showing. And again, they were a 7-point home dog. You were on them.
The Yakos. Home dog.
I just never understood. And Texas, you know, hypothetically, if this is simmed a bunch of times, can win this game. But I just never understood. Like, I appreciated that you had the confidence where you're just like, I am planting my flag with this one. I'm like, it's a tough place to win. And by the way, something that we both overlooked, not just about this game. A lot of these games that seem trappy, that seem interesting, feature fans back in stadiums for the first time.
It's great to have the fans back, isn't it?
It's great to have the fans back. What a fantasy thing aside.
You just gave me fantasy points on that one, but continue.
Right. The energy is heightened from where it normally might be at this point in the season. Like, we'll talk about Penn State, Ball State eventually. Like, we looked at that, I was like, oh, this is kind of trappy. Auburn's next week. Last week was a Wisconsin game. It was the first time fans were en masse in Beaver Stadium in quite some time. And so it had the energy of a much bigger game. And this was the case, I think, across the country.
Well, let's move to the Holy War, right?
Yeah.
Speaking of which, the BYU-Utah game, BYU wins. They looked really good. This was the late game, 10:15 Eastern kickoff. No turnovers for the Cougs. They controlled the line of scrimmage, 11 for 19 on third downs, which was just an absolute dagger. I can't tell you, this Utah defense for a long time has been very good at getting off the field. Mm-hmm. Very good at getting off the field, and they just couldn't. 11 for 19 on third downs really hampered their efforts to try and win this one. The numbers for Jaren Hall, the new starting quarterback for BYU against Zach Wilson, is going to be playing with the Jets. We're recording this today on Sunday. He's, I believe, their starter. It's tough to replace a guy of that caliber. Jaren Hall steps in. The numbers don't necessarily jump off the page at you if you're just looking at the box score, but made some really big plays in this one, had three touchdowns through the air, ran for another 92 on the ground here as they get the job done. I was all in on Utah because they sort of had BYU's number, but BYU came to play here. And I think through two games, you know, you try not to be too reactionary to what you see in the first month of the season, right? Right. But BYU through two games is looking very formidable. Very formidable. It's a You don't think?
I think that term means more than you're attaching with regard to BYU. I thought Arizona was proven and reinforced to be something that needs a lot this last week, and that wasn't a runaway
success. Utah has like 20 starters back.
No, I know, but we continue. Sorry, I'll let you finish, but I'm skeptical of very formidable.
Okay. They look good. Through 2 weeks, they've looked very good. How formidable, we will find out in time. But what's interesting about BYU's schedule is they play a lot of teams from a lot of different conferences. So
totally,
they will be a very interesting measuring stick, if nothing more, as we progress now through the rest of the season.
Yeah, it wasn't a Dvorak game for me, but something of note as I scrub through this game. And you mentioned Utah's defense. I'm not actually that worried about Utah's defense. Utah's offense with Chaz Brewer, it was basically four plays and you're out of there.
Yeah.
Whether it ended in a touchdown, whether it ended in a punt, whether it ended in a turnover, like here's the number of plays on Utah drives. Okay. It was 4, 6, 3, 6, 5 and a half, whatever. And then 3, 9, that was the one more than 5 or 6, 5, 5, 6. So it was just a matter of Utah's defense. And I'm not a huge looker at time of possession, because if you score quickly, your time of possession isn't going to be there. But Utah was doing nothing and doing it quickly. And that does hang your defense out to dry. So I'm not nearly as worried about the Utah defense as I am the Utah offense with Chaz Brewer and Andy Ludwig and the sort of up and down nature of what this offense might look like this year.
If you travel for work, you know to pack 2 suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/business.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about all from the comfort of your home isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Let's move to your lock of the week, Texas A&M, -17.
I mean, they did lose their quarterback 4 minutes into the game or something, but continue.
They were -17 on the road, this one being played in Denver, against Colorado. A&M, for their part, hunkered down on defense and got a big time clunker win, 10-7.
Huge.
They did lose Haynes King. Haynes King injured his leg in the first quarter. It couldn't put any weight on it. Kind of a weird play where he got tackled and spun around, and you're not sure what exactly happened there. Jimbo Fisher did not offer any more clarity, just said that they were waiting on a final diagnosis. So by the time many of you listen to this, there may be a final diagnosis, and we'll find out if he's out for any extended period of time. But that definitely put this offense in a bit of a bind. The backup, Zach Calzada, came in. It was okay. You know, nothing great. They did have trouble getting points, obviously, moving the football.
I thought it was rough. I think okay is generous. Until that throw to Isaiah Spiller, there was some struggles.
Yeah, he broke through in the end. He tossed a nice touchdown pass to Isaiah Spiller. That's what gave them the win. But for the most part, A&M trailed this game 7-3 most of the way. I kept thinking it was a Big Ten West cover album is what this was. It was just a really tough watch. Unless you had a stake on either side of the game here, this was not one that you wanted to tune into because of just all defense, electric football, just crashing together until somebody eventually breaks through.
Great linebacker day. Antonio Johnson for A&M and Nate Landman. If I like just the name, Nate Landman sounds like a Wisconsin or Iowa linebacker. He's over the place, will be drafted quite highly, and is an absolute highlight of this Colorado defense, who I think played really hard up front, because we're still talking about a Texas A&M offensive line, even though they've been inconsistent and disappointing. Like, there are some big time dudes on that line. And I thought Colorado, for what it's worth, and they, I mean, losing what they've lost, they lose Sam Noyer. He transfers to Oregon State. They're beat up at quarterback, and they're starting, I think it's Brandon Lewis, a younger guy. Just the firepower isn't there for Colorado's offense to, you know, 14 points wins this game. Yeah. It absolutely wins this game. And I just thought, especially when you're down a quarterback and the defense needs to fly the plane, I thought what A&M was able to do on defense with, what did you say, it was 7-3 most of this game, to stay in it. And, you know, Mike Elko's rotating in dudes. I thought he did a great job calling this game. And, yeah, an absolute clunker for A&M that they were able to pull off. You know, I suppose good to see if you're an A&M fan that at least you're winning this game when your quarterback goes down. But, yeah, there are some definite concerns. I think Zach Calzada, he's got an interesting arm. Jimbo talked about...
He has an interesting arm.
Jimbo talked about that he was going through his progressions too quickly, and it's just, it was sort of jittery and jumpy in his first, you know, time pressed into real action. But I think the talent could be there. I'm down on A&M if they are without Haynes King for extended time, just because he's been taking, you know, the reps with the ones, whatever. So hopefully A&M is able to look at the film and say, oh, this was there, that was there, this is how we can fix X, Y, and Z. But yeah, kind of a drecky game.
Let's go on over to the rest of the SEC. We'll start in the SEC West here with the Mississippi State, NC State game. This is one that we pulled out during our previews as low key, under the radar, maybe the best game of the day, I think I said.
Well, it's wild, but yeah.
And I locked up NC State. This is our crush game, because I've been all in on NC State. Mm-hmm. You've been all in on Mississippi State. And look, this was one of the three, the only one of the three locks that I made that I got wrong. I got the other two right, but I was painfully wrong going NC State minus the number on this one. This is a brutal watch, too. I had to turn this one off. And it wasn't quite to the depths of the A&M Colorado game. It was just a total mismatch. It was a total mismatch. NC State trailed the whole game, wire to wire. Mississippi State ran the kickoff, the opening kickoff back.
Tulu Griffin? Yeah.
Yeah, 100 yards, scored a touchdown. They were down the whole game. Also had a TD for your boy, Jaden Wally. We have to play the sound.
Wally. Of course.
That's what we do on the show here.
Yeah.
But otherwise, you know, Mississippi State just frustrated the hell out of NC State. NC State was 6 of 20 on third downs. If you talk about the eye test, though, not living in the world of statistics, it just looked like a mismatch to me. It looked like Mississippi State was bigger. They were more physical. They were faster. Every time NC State had an opportunity to try and get something going, it was just Mississippi State was better. They were just better. And I don't know how you quantify that other than the score and some of the other stuff that we talk about day in and day out around here. But Mississippi State, if you watch that game, I don't know how you come away from that without thinking, wow, they were the better team.
25 carries for 32 yards into the Mississippi State front.
Yeah, and so by the way, that was what I called out. That was what I called out. We've been hearing all preseason, all part of the early season here, and even last week after what NC State did on the ground, this looked like a prolific rushing attack. It still could be one in the ACC, but not against Mississippi State.
No, I was high on Mississippi State's defense going into the season. The defense really won State the game. I mean, it was 17 offensive points, right, for the Bulldogs. So it wasn't some sort of explosion for Mississippi State. In fact, quite the opposite. They couldn't really stay on the field that well. I think their third down percentage was, were they like 3 of 12, 3 of 13, something like that. So NC State's defense did everything it needed to do to make this a game and for the Wolfpack to win this game. I just thought the State defense just did such a sensational job up front, and they didn't score until like a minute left, right? And into the end zone, I mean. They didn't score a touchdown, NC State.
Right.
So
right.
I just thought, wire to wire, I came away really impressed. The crowd was going bonkers. And Mississippi State has to clean up a lot on offense to me still. But no, really impressive.
When I sent you a message, I wasn't fully paying attention to what was going on. It was Anish Shroff, our friend who we've had on the show. He was working that game.
Mike Golic Jr. too, right?
Yeah, and Mike.
Double guest.
And I said to you, man, what is going on with the interference? There's like a weird audio interference thing. I didn't realize it was cowbells. It was so loud. You couldn't even hear the announcers. It was crazy. What an environment.
Yeah. So I'm not super down on NC State, but I mean, I don't know which defensive lines they face this year that can replicate what Mississippi State looked like up front, but there's some cleanup needed in Iowa Wolfpack.
All right. I'm going to go through very quickly through the other SEC action because we have many other games to get to. Alabama rolls over Mercer 42-14. Georgia, led by Stetson Bennett, who had five touchdowns in the first half, 56-7 over UAB. We had Florida 42-20 over USF, a very real quarterback controversy brewing in Gainesville. We had Auburn with another 60 burger, this one over Alabama State 62-0. South Carolina 20-17 over East Carolina. Ole Miss wins big over Austin Peay. Mm-hmm. LSU as dominant as you'd expect over McNeese State. And congratulations. They were fine, Dan. They were fine. They were fine.
As dominant as you'd expect is not how I would characterize it. It was fine, but I'm not especially big on LSU's offense right now.
I know you're not. And finally, congratulations are in order to Clark Lee, who got his first win over Colorado State. If we said it once, we said it 1,000 times. Steve Adazio ain't it for the Rams.
No, he's not.
But good on Clark Lee for the W.
That was a super late kick. Like that's a reverse body clock. I think was it an 8 o'clock Mountain Time kick, which I think was Tennessee on Central? I think Tennessee, so it's a 9 o'clock body. Like it's a late, late game.
Yeah.
So of those games, Will Anderson hurt for Alabama. Big deal. He's questionable against Florida. Huge game next week. You're right about the quarterback controversy because holy hell. Does
Anthony Richardson
look electric? Yeah.
He
really
real
does look like the future. Yeah. Emory Jones looked fine, but I don't know. I don't know if ceiling wise, I think things are like the clouds are parting a little bit. I don't know if I just imply that Anthony Richardson is God, but I didn't mean to.
He could be.
Could be, yeah. Disappointed in LSU's offense. Ole Miss, good performance. What else did you mention there? You mentioned Vandy. Anything else? Did I miss anybody? Oh, Auburn, good performance ahead of, Penn State next week, right?
Yep.
Penn State next week. And Alabama on offense. I'm not worried. I think that's too strong a word. But I'm intrigued about the steps needed. The offensive line looked, I don't know if it's a motivation thing against Mercer. I don't know if it's Bryce Young. Like, Alabama has the fewest questions to me of any team in the country right now, but I don't think it's automatic right now for me, the Tide. They're unquestionably closest to great, but I don't know. There's some work to clean up. If Georgia has an offensive pulse, I think it's interesting. By the way, did you mention Kentucky Mizzou? Did I just skip over that?
Oh, I think I missed that one.
Yeah. Kentucky Mizzou, an SEC game. And Kentucky's Chris Rodriguez is fun. Rodriguez and Wandale Robinson and having, speaking of pulse, a passing attack. You know, Kentucky has some cleanup to do on defense, but a shocking revelation to see a complete Kentucky offense. I don't think Will Levis is somebody who's going to beat really good SEC teams, but
Wandale
can make it more interesting. Wandale can run with anybody.
He's awesome.
So, really, really impressive win. I don't know what the future holds for Mizzou, but nice to see a hopeful step forward for the Kentucky offense.
Let's move over to the Big Ten. We had a nightcap. We had Michigan beating Washington by 21, 31-10. Washington may actually be Big Sky bad. They may be Big Sky bad. They lost last week to Montana. They lose pretty handily this week to Michigan. First time since 2008 that Washington has lost its opening two games, and that was the year they went 0-12, so not a great bit of foreshadowing.
Right.
I was texting with friend of the show Tim Murray during this game, and he was very like-minded in that he didn't understand the point spread. The point spread was Washington plus 6.5 going into this game. We understood why they were the dog. We just didn't understand why it wasn't higher. Much to what right. I said on the previous show. Why isn't this higher? It seems like it should be higher. What does Vegas know that I don't know? Right. And for her part, my wonderful puppy also picked Michigan minus the number. She's now 2-0 on the year.
Nice.
But it became very apparent very quickly that this was going to end badly when Washington took a delay game on the very first play from scrimmage. Very first play, delay game. Tim and I are texting back and forth. He's like, nah, this isn't going to work well. Michigan won the game, Dan, with 44 yards passing.
2.9 per attempt. Yeah.
44 yards passing. They had 343 on the ground. Really good efforts from Blake Corum and Hassan Haskins. But Michigan pretty much went full on Wisconsin here with their game plan. Mm-hmm. And it was just not close. They hammered Washington. What's the deal?
Who's the most obvious offensive half team? Because there needs to be an alliance with Washington's defense. Let's get these two groups. Is it Ole Miss? I don't know. Ole Miss's defense is getting interesting. I don't know who that team is. But Washington does not have much in the way of an offense. And that's the kindest way I can put it. I think Dylan Morris is fine. I think, was it Bynum who had a couple really interesting? Yeah, Terrell Bynum, who had a couple really interesting catches, including the touchdown catch. But the way this offense is called, the way that this offense is organized in big moments, the high leverage moment, again, we talked about going for it on fourth and one and just trying to run up the gut without having, you know, and Washington has a really strong at times offensive line, but they got hounded in a big moment deeper into Michigan territory. Like they just, Washington is not a moment team at all.
No,
there was something about Chris Peterson. We're like, he's got something for this, right?
Yeah.
We were like, fourth and three, but he's going for it midfield. He's got something for this. He's got some sort of misdirection where, you know, Jake Browning is going to roll out and hit a tight end or, you know, receiver running a little comeback. You're like, he's got some. When do you watch the Washington offense and say, John Donovan's got something for this moment?
No
is the right answer. Yeah. And I don't think Michigan's all that good, frankly. I think their defense is playing with a lot more fight than they were last year. But Michigan's offense, it's not especially scary. I mean, they ran the hell out of the ball, and they should be able to do that against a lot of teams on their schedule. But I don't trust this Michigan offense at all. Like, if they have to score 28 points against a decent team, I don't know where it's coming from, especially without Ronnie Bell.
The running game's really impressive. And I think they're going to try and use that as much as they can. I don't think Cade McNamara is going to go out and throw you to victory. No. I just don't think he's that kind of quarterback. I think he's good at minimizing mistakes. He's been very good at doing that in his time as Michigan quarterback. But, you know, there is a ceiling there. And that's part of why I think this was so striking a defeat for Washington. We sort of knew what we had with Michigan. We know what we're going to get with Michigan. Washington has just bottomed out here, especially on offense. And I don't know if it's a John Donovan thing. I don't know if it's a Jimmy Lake thing. I don't know what it is. They just weren't competitive. And so, look, if you're Michigan, you'll take this as a big win at home. You're trying to build some momentum. What you did on the ground was damn impressive. Good on them. Yeah. But Jimmy Lake, man, he's got some real questions to answer now as he heads back out west, because it's shaping up to be a Pac-12 that's very interesting all of a sudden. For as much as we were down on the Pac-12 a week ago.
Is it?
I think so. It's very easily a conference where on any given week, any team can jump up and beat you. Maybe outside of Arizona. But where does it go from here for Washington and Jimmy Lake is going to be an incredibly fascinating storyline to follow.
I agree. I just, man. They look so flat in terms of finishing drives, in terms of moments, that they have guys on this offense. Like, I don't think Dylan Morris is a bad quarterback per se. I think he has limitations.
Yeah.
But no, Washington as a team who was supposed to contend for the North, if not the conference, was in retrospect pretty far-fetched. And by the way, just looking forward to Michigan and talking about like what they're going to need out of this offense, these are the defenses they face after Rutgers, who they have in a couple weeks. Wisconsin, Nebraska. Nebraska has a pretty good defense. Say what you will, but they have a pretty good defense. Northwestern, Michigan State on the road, Indiana, at Penn State, yeah, and an improved at Maryland, and then Ohio State. Like, there are going to be difficulties for this Michigan offense ahead. They can win some of those games. That Wisconsin game is going to be a 13-10 game. But, yeah, in terms of electricity, we're running on candles here.
All right. Let's go through some of the other games in the Big Ten here quickly. I'll mm-hmm. rifle through, and then we'll
please
circle back with comments. Penn State, for all the letdown look-ahead talk, just destroyed Ball State, 44-13. Noah Kane looked good. Sean Clifford looked good. I feel like we saw even a little bit more out of the offense, which was nice.
Did Noah Kane look good?
I thought so.
I scrubbed through this game pretty quickly, but I didn't really see Penn State moving the ball on the ground all that much.
No, I thought I just felt like what we saw from him was serviceable enough. I don't know. I think they're still trying to find ways to get him involved. They do have plenty of options at that running back position.
Yeah.
Continue. So how they use him is going to be interesting, but they win pretty handily. Michigan State, another really impressive performance, albeit against Youngstown State, 42-14. Rutgers 17-7 over the Syracuse Orange.
Minnesota, one of my home dogs that didn't come through.
Yeah, exactly. Minnesota 31-26 over Miami, Ohio. Northwestern wins over Indiana State. Purdue destroys UConn. Nebraska big over Buffalo, and Maryland 62-0 at night over Howard. Any thoughts on any of those games?
Not especially. Yeah, as I'm looking through, I mean, you didn't mention Illinois' loss. I guess we're going to get to the ACC. We'll talk about Pitt, Tennessee with that one as well. No, nothing that really jumped out. No opponent that you can really take too much away from with those wins. So,
No. Rutgers, by the way, is playing definitive Iowa football thus far this season. This was not pretty, but serviceable enough on offense with no turnovers. Meanwhile, they force three from Syracuse, 17-7. Nice win. Rutgers 2-0.
Should point out, Miami of Ohio made this a game against Minnesota late. They went down 5 with 3 minutes left. They put a scare into the Gophers.
Miami Ohio trailed 21-20
right
early in the fourth quarter here. Yeah. And then Minnesota pulled away. The positive sign, if there was one for Minnesota, though, was Trayson Potts, who took over for Mo Ibrahim at running back after the injury, 34 carries for 178 and 2 touchdowns. They're going to need more from him.
I don't know what's going on with Tanner Morgan in that offense, in that passing game, but yeah, they're going to need something better.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the ACC. Let's go over to Miami 25, App State 23. Woo! Okay.
Is this one of those, like, maybe we'll downgrade the Alabama win after watching this one? Continue.
Miami held on to win. But let's talk about the storyline here, Dan.
Okay.
Let's talk about the cat on the upper deck. Can we talk about the cat on the upper deck, please?
I'm sure Nicole Auerbach will be writing a story, finding the cat owner, finding why the cat was in the stadium in the first place, the preferred snacks of the cat. But we can go there.
There was a cat dangling from the upper deck. They don't know how it got in the stadium, but it was in there. It was dangling from the upper deck. Mm-hmm. And some heroes who brought in an American flag, no less, on 9/11,
mm-hmm.
they catch the cat as it falls from the upper deck in the flag. The cat's fine. They give it to stadium staff. And I will eagerly be awaiting that article that somebody will inevitably write about the cat. But that was kind of the social media moment of this game, that if you haven't had a chance to check that out, please go on out and I'm sure see it everywhere by the time you hear this podcast. As for the game, though, this is a back and forth game, Dan.
It absolutely was. It absolutely was. We had the long kick return.
Yeah. Yeah. The lead changed 3 times in the second half. Ultimately, it was a safety that App State took in the first quarter on a botched punt that ended up being the difference. But back and forth game here, you know, we've come to expect these types of games from App State, though. Maybe not with Chase Brice, former Duke quarterback Chase Brice at the helm. But they're always in these games, and we had some, at least I had some concern about what Miami's state of mind would be coming out of that Alabama loss, going back home against a team in App State. We debated whether or not Michigan State being on deck had any any influence on a game like this, but
right.
Do we downgrade the quality of the win for Alabama? Do we downgrade our preseason thoughts about Miami because they almost lost to App State? Probably could have lost, should have lost to App State. Like, where are you at on how we grade this one out now in retrospect?
I am very down on Miami's offense.
Yeah.
It was three field goals, right? Yep. Borregales, who's the little brother of the other Borregales, he kicks three field goals. That's a bright spot for this Miami team. The bright spot's also the defense. So the defense allows... They're in the teens, whatever, because there was the 100-yard kick return. So that's special teams. The first one was a short field, right? The first touchdown for Miami. So Miami putting together a touchdown drive, stringing together a touchdown drive against App State. I don't know if it's D.R. King thing. I don't know if he just feels off. There are definite playmakers on this Miami offense. They're looking at a bunch of Legos, and it doesn't seem like they have the manual. I'm just down on this Miami offense, and it's unfortunate because I think this defense has, you know, playmaking, havoc-y pieces, you know, Bubba Bolden, you know, probably chief among them. But yeah, I don't think there's a cohesive plan on offense, and Miami's going to lose 2.5 games. They probably shouldn't. I don't know how you lose half a game like in a crazy clunker that would win. I don't know, but I'm down on Miami as a top 15, 12 team, something like that. I just don't see it.
It's easy to feel that way after what we saw.
And it's early.
In the first 2 weeks.
There's time. But early evidence is mounting.
Yeah, and two big injuries for Miami as well, which we should mention. Cheney Jr. at running back and Keontra Smith at linebacker. Have not seen, again, we are recording this very early on Sunday morning, have not seen the diagnosis for either of those guys, but two potentially pretty big losses for the Canes. We'll keep you posted on that one.
Yep.
Elsewhere in the ACC, let's talk about that Pitt-Tennessee game. Score was 41-34. Another one of Ty's winning locks of the week.
Mm-hmm.
I could just throw that out there. I am supremely curious to know how Vols fans feel about this game, because I have to imagine it was equal parts encouraging and frustrating to watch this one. Encouraging because it was definitely winnable. Even after Joe Milton went down and Hendon Hooker came in.
Made plays,
yeah. It was a very winnable game. They could have won. Frustrating, I think, for that very reason. Frustrating because Pitt just sort of pulled away and had a few more big plays that they made, including a big goal line stand in the fourth quarter that could have tied it up for the Vols. The turnovers just get you if you're Tennessee. They had three in this game. I think if you are a Vols fan, again, it's kind of like bittersweet. You feel like you could have gotten it done. Pitt just made a few more big plays, and that's how they were able to get that separation.
Yeah, Kenny Pickett had a nice day. I think the receivers came to play for Pitt. Pitt started pretty slowly, and Joe Milton missed a bunch and then got hurt and had drop. There were drop issues for Tennessee. So, yeah, I mean, if we are in agreement that Pitt is a decent enough team and that Tennessee was in it against a decent enough team, that's optimistic. But the way that they lost this game was not all that fun to watch. I'm positive if you're a Vol fan.
No.
So,
oh, no.
Takeaway is impressed with Pitt. Intrigued by their ceiling, especially if they're able to generate points continually. Weird game. I guess Hendon Hooker's the guy moving forward, and he definitely added life to this team with his arm because Joe Milton was just not getting it done in that arena. Joe Milton was a lot more effective on the ground, it seemed. I did not watch this game as closely as I will shortly. But, it's not a moral victory for Tennessee, but, you know, impressive from Pitt.
Impressive from Pitt, and Kenny Pickett, you called him out. He's come a long way.
Yeah.
He's come a long way. He was good in this game. All right. Let's do the Jacksonville State, Florida State thing. Wow, man.
Start Mackenzie Milton.
Mackenzie Milton. Final score here is Jacksonville State 20, Florida State 17. Talk about a kick in the pants if you are a Florida State fan. It's your first ever loss to an FCS opponent. And that comes 1 week after you take Notre Dame to overtime. Now, we could debate the merits of the Notre Dame game until we're blue in the face. But that being what it is, you're Florida State. You really have no business losing to an FCS school, even if it's an upper tier one like a Jacksonville State has been historically. This game, in a nutshell, is what Florida State's been battling off the last couple of years. There is a definitive Wile E. Coyote quality to the Florida State Seminoles in that they keep shooting themselves in the foot. They even know that they have to stop shooting themselves in the foot, but they can't. In this one, it was penalties. Penalties killed them. 11 for 114 yards. Take the yardage and throw it out the window for a second. The penalties negated some really big moments for the Noles. Turnovers, big plays. You can't do that. You can't do that. It doesn't matter if it's against an FCS school or against Notre Dame or whoever. So much of what has pained the Noles all this time now, feels like an eternity, has been these shoot yourself in the foot type of moments. And again, that's what they did. Instead, they let Jacksonville State hang around. Zarek Cooper, a former Clemson player, connects with a former Duke receiver on a 59-yard touchdown pass to win it on the very last play of the game. Don't know what Florida State's secondary was doing on that one, but man, what an absolute rock bottom moment for this Noles program. It's really, really painful to watch.
Zarek Cooper has been excellent for Jacksonville State the past couple of years, I believe. Are there six wins on this Florida State schedule? Are there three?
There were six wins, Dan, if we counted this one as a gimme, because when we did the preview, I did the preview for this side of the ACC, and I remember definitively, now I was much higher on Florida State at the time than certainly I am now, with an 0-2 start and still having so many mistakes out there. But yeah, you count Jacksonville State, of course you do, as a win. And that's not even an optimistic point of view. It just seems like it should be a gimme. Clearly not.
Not even the game as a gimme. The final play from Jacksonville State's own, was it from their own 40, 41, something like that? Where you're just like, send everybody back. Nobody catches it. And if somebody catches it, five people tackle him. And the tackling was atrocious. The completion that it was allowed to occur was atrocious. And I mean, Florida State's defense did a good enough job. I think Florida State's defense is going to be better this year. But in terms of that specific play and not being ready to make a play, the easiest play, presumably, given the numbers advantage one should have in that scenario. Because it was, 17-13 in that moment?
Yep.
All you have to do is stay behind them. That's all it is. That's name of the game in that moment. And now when you look ahead, you have Syracuse and UMass. Everything else? I mean, Wake, Louisville, North Carolina. I mean, granted, these are teams with big issues. But NC State, Miami, Boston College, Florida, a lot of those on the road?
Those are all losable.
Can you, would you wager for or against Florida State winning four of those games?
Oh, I would definitely wager against.
Yeah.
Four of those? No way. No way. And that's not trying to be doom and gloom or trying to be snarky about Florida State. That's just being honest.
I guess two of, I mean, that is if Syracuse and UMass, they're going to beat UMass. And maybe this is a look ahead, let down, look ahead sandwich, whatever, after the emotional loss to Notre Dame ahead of the beginning of their, the beginning of their ACC schedule. But,
problematic. Okay.
Yep.
UVA wins by 28 over Illinois. That was an early kickoff, an 11 a.m. kickoff Eastern time. We had Clemson 49-3 over South Carolina State, Virginia Tech by 21 over Middle Tennessee, North Carolina 59-17 over Georgia State. Boston College wins over UMass, but Phil Dracovic got hurt.
I saw that.
Hopefully
a wrist injury.
They Jeff Hafley wasn't sure. They asked him. They said he had x-rays. It was something with his right hand or wrist. We'll have to watch and see what comes of that. That could obviously be a pretty big deal for Boston College. Louisville wins by 27. Georgia Tech beats Kennesaw State. Wake over Norfolk State.
Norfolk. I gotta pronounce that correctly,
Norfolk,
right?
Yep.
Norfolk.
41-16 and Duke over North Carolina A&T.
By the way, first of all, just quick thoughts on those. Sam Howell's getting beat up. He did everything for the Tar Heels, and eventually they won that game. But he is taking some shots. Also, Brennan Armstrong, just very quietly. Don't tell too many people. Don't tell too many people. And Keaton Thompson, sort of now an all-purpose everything for Virginia. If Virginia's defense, especially that back end, can improve to suspect... If Virginia's back into that defense and proves to suspects, sorry, from where they were last year, where they gave up a ton, Virginia's in an interesting place. If what we saw from Brennan Armstrong is an indication of something moving forward.
And I think it is, by the way. I think he's really good.
Because I think they're pretty solid up front on defense. A vulnerable North Carolina, vulnerable Wake, vulnerable Miami, albeit North Carolina, Miami on the road, vulnerable Louisville on the road, Duke, not good. Georgia Tech, not good. BYU is going to be tricky.
There's BYU again, right?
The narrative with Bronco, I get all of that. Notre Dame's at home, more vulnerable than
not vulnerable at all, thank you.
At Pitt's going to be tough. Virginia Tech is, I guess, TBD. But if Brennan Armstrong is one of the three or four best quarterbacks in the conference,
yeah,
Virginia might just like buy in early a little bit. I'm saying.
Well, remember the storyline for the ACC, not just this year.
It was Illinois. Granted, it's Illinois. It's Art Sikowski. Grain of salt. But that's what a good team should do.
It's what a good team should
rebuilding.
Do.
Yeah.
And as we said, again, before this whole thing even kicked off, the storyline in the ACC was not so much for the top. It's for the middle.
Mm-hmm.
It's for that next rung. Who is the next best of the rest? And yeah. I don't know if Virginia was so much part of that conversation as a team like a Miami or a North Carolina, even a Louisville or a Pitt. But
yeah.
Interesting. Reason to be interested in what goes on moving forward now for the Virginia Cavaliers.
Perhaps the ACC aggressively competent champion of 2021.
All right. Let's go out west. Let's talk about Stanford 42.
Oh, man.
USC 28. I have a question.
Please.
I'm just preparing the meat.
That tenderizes it.
That tenderizes it in a big way.
Crock potting!
Yeah!
Was this a crock potting by the Stanford Cardinal?
I mean, they were up 42-13, so they really got up after it. They scored pretty quickly. We had a long Nathaniel Pete run. They didn't do anything on the ground basically after that. I think Tanner McKee is quietly one of the better quarterbacks nationally. I just don't think he has the weapons around him, nor does he have a non-stubborn offense to work within. But yeah, there's definitely that element. But it was pretty. Didn't Stanford score 21 points in the first half? That's what I have here.
Stanford
scoring 21 points in a half in the modern era is like in if you translate that to a more interesting team, it's like 40. So, yeah, there is that element of crockpotting. But, yeah, they had a pick six and that long run. But, good bounce back week. And that's sort of the value play, right? Like this week is value week. The teams are going to improve from week one.
Yeah, it's just if you look at the box score, which you can't to get the full context. But if you didn't watch this game, and if you go back and if you look at the box score, you're going to come away looking at this being like, how did they score 42 points exactly? How did this happen? USC sort of pulling a little bit of their own version of Florida State. A little FSU West here. 9 penalties, 111 yards. They can't do that. Again, talk about wins that we looked at before the season. Neither you nor I thought a whole lot of Stanford. I don't know if this changes that to a large degree, because Stanford has its own questions to solve for sure. But this was definitely one I was counting on for USC. I can tell you that much.
A USC team who had their kicker ejected for targeting early on in this game. And it was the right call. He led with his helmet.
Good for him, man. Yeah. Getting in on it.
USC's offense is so disappointingly bland, and you're wasting Drake London. Like, there's guys that have been around forever. These running backs were pretty good. Keontae Ingram has been a college football running back, a decent one, for quite some time now, and he was fine. And Keaton Slovis has been a starting quarterback for 3 years. Graham Harrell has been there for 3 years, and they're just blah. There's just nothing to it. It's a lot of short stuff. They're wasting dudes. And I don't know that Keaton Slovis is amazing, but to lose a game like this, to have like the first half that they did, the wasted drives that they did, I'm just not a believer.
Not a USC believer. No, Keaton Slovis is fine. He's a very good college quarterback, Let's pump the brakes on the Heisman. Let's pump the brakes on NFL superstardom.
9 penalties for 111 yards.
Yep.
USC.
That's what I said.
A losing effort. Yeah.
ASU wins by 27 over UNLV. We had Oregon State winning 45-27 over the Hawaii Rainbow Warriors. We had Washington State by 20 over Portland State. And San Diego State, 38-14 over Arizona. Any of those games jump out to you?
Not especially. Cal had that lead against TCU and saw go away. Zach Evans was a full-on dude for the Frogs. So disappointing from Cal, now moving to 0-2. UNLV has a long ways to go, but good for Arizona State for comfortably winning that game. It was, I think it was close at halftime. This was a late game that I was not really paying attention to last night and caught up this morning. No, I think that's sort of it in terms of thoughts. I mean, the Beavers getting to 1-1 is good. Siobhan Cordero had a nice day.
He looked good.
But the turnovers were crucial, and it was Chance Nolan, right, for Oregon State in this game? Had a good one?
Yep.
Yeah, Chance Nolan. Sam Noyer was not the quarterback. Yeah, Chance Nolan. So, yeah, good for Oregon State, who I think is going to be a tough out this year. A nice balanced win against Washington, or against Hawaii.
Well, you stole my thunder a little bit talking about the TCU-Cal game. I was going to move to the Big 12 next anyway, so it's a pro segue from you, professional podcaster Dan Rubenstein.
That's what I do. That's what I do.
TCU wins 34 to 32, over Cal at home. This one's going to get lost in the shuffle, I think, during an otherwise chaotic week two. But this is an interesting game. So Cal was up early. They lost the lead. They regained the lead. Then they lost it for good later on. They had some dumb mistakes here. They missed a bunch of opportunities, frankly. They should have won this game.
Sure.
But instead, I will focus on my boys down there in Fort Worth, Texas. Some big plays on defense.
I guess. Continue.
Hacksaw Max Duggan, baby. 3 touchdowns through the air, 1 on the ground. Zach Evans, a full-on dude.
Yeah.
Getting his 190, a long touchdown on the ground. Remember, he was a 5-star in the class of 2020. Mm-hmm. Saw him more second half of last year. They were confident. They were optimistic that they had something in him. One of the best prospects, if not the best prospect, to ever set foot on the TCU campus. He is poised for a monster year. Obviously, if you're TCU, you would like a little bit more separation from Cal. Okay, I got my hands up. I'm with you. I'll fully acknowledge that much. But when you're clunkers, they got the win at home. If you're TCU, I think you're starting to hopefully now build this thing on offense. Get this thing moving a little bit better. Got to play better on defense, mind you.
Why do you think TCU should assume a win over Cal? Recent TCU.
Recent
I'd just be happy with a win.
TCU should not. No.
Okay. I was going to say. Yeah, they went with what worked. By the way, the end of this game was 4 out of 5 drives ending in a touchdown. It was a nice wham, 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 haymakers left and right. I really enjoyed it. I mean, I was hoping Cal would win because I am a Pac-12 homer, but good to see TCU pull this out and really fun to watch Zach Evans cook.
Elsewhere in the Big 12, we had Oklahoma State 28-23. Tulsa led this one in the fourth quarter, and again, the story for Oklahoma State was the offense stalling out. We did get to see Spencer Sanders.
It's broken,
play.
Man. Yeah.
Yeah. In this one, the defense, though, is coming to play. And that's pretty much the reason why they knocked off Tulsa here. Bit of a rivalry, 28-23 in favor of the Pokes. Oklahoma 76-0 over Western Carolina. Spencer Rattler with 5 touchdowns there. Coastal Carolina knocks off Kansas. This was an earlier game earlier in the week by a 49-22 score.
Mr. Bean showing some life, though, man.
Jason Bean, baby. Yeah.
I like it. Another British comedy legend, as somebody pointed out to us in the Big 12.
Texas Tech 28-22. Struggled a bit with Stephen F. Austin.
Yeah, Tyler Shuck wasn't great, the little I saw.
West Virginia 66-0 over Long Island U, which was this the team that was playing club football until very recently?
Is it? I don't even know.
I think it was.
I don't think this is... Is this the LIU that I didn't live far from in Brooklyn? I don't know. That might have been Long Island Tech or something. I don't know. It's the Sharks, by the way.
The fact that we're having this discussion indicates why it was a 66-0 score.
Right.
Baylor 66-7 over Texas Southern. And K-State 31-23 over Southern Illinois.
Long Island football plays at the Bethpage Federal Credit Union Stadium.
I thought you were going to say Bethpage Golf Course.
In Brookville, New York. Have you played Bethpage?
I have not. I want to play it.
No, neither have I. I don't golf. So, all right.
The only other action that I'll call out here is that Cincinnati won by 35 over Murray State.
Slow start.
And Louisiana with a bit of a close one here against Nicholls. They win 27-24.
I did see that in that Cincinnati matchup that Murray State kind of packed it in and had like 8-minute drive, 7-minute drive, 9-minute drive. So they played keep away until they couldn't. And Cincinnati ultimately. Jerome Ford, by the way, I'm into him.
Yeah, you're into him.
Into him, the Alabama transfer. Elsewhere, just Pat League action tie. Stony Brook, who's taken on Oregon in a letdown spot, took it to Colgate, 24-3. Richmond, we liked a lot, 31-3 over your Engineers of Lehigh. Georgetown takes down Delaware State away from the Hornets' Nest that is multi-sport field. Merrimack takes down Holy Cross. Merrimack, how about that, Ty? Massachusetts. Yeah. We learned that episode. Bucknell gets destroyed by Villanova, 55-3. Bill and Mary, 24-3 over my Yetis of Lafayette. And Monmouth edging out Fordham. Not a strong week. I think it was Georgetown. Yeah, Georgetown, the only team to emerge victorious in America's conference.
Go Hoyas. Do we want to do dudes?
I have a few. Yeah.
Let's call out some dudes who had a day on
CJ
Saturday.
Verdell, Oregon. Also, Jackson Smith Njigba for Ohio State. Just seemed to be open all the time. Zach Evans, I mentioned TCU. Chris Rodriguez, Kentucky. Blake Corum for Michigan.
Yeah. Good game.
Led the way, for sure. Brennan Armstrong, I've already talked about. And I have Nate Landman for Colorado, helping to keep the Buffs in quite an ugly game. There were many more dudes, but that's what I have.
All righty.
KJ Jefferson, he was fun to watch, too.
Well, that does it for the Week 2 Reaction Show. We appreciate everybody calling in. Mm-hmm. It was a chaotic week of college football. Again, always the quiet ones. Never sure when stuff's going to go down, but we will be on your airwaves again here coming up very shortly. Many of you are listening to this on Monday. Don't forget, you can get early access to shows like this. You can actually watch the live stream of this show every Sunday morning if you are a premium Verballer. For more information on that, go on out to our Patreon at verballers.com. We also will do the preview show on Wednesday for the public, Tuesday for the Patreon subs, talking about week 3. And then we'll circle back on all things news related a little bit later in the week for a WSV News Radio show.
Week 3 intrigue, by the way, in reverse order, not of the intrigue level, but of chronological order. Fresno at UCLA. Fresno might be pretty good. Like, we could upgrade Fresno based on what we saw out of Oregon against Ohio State. UCLA coming off of a bye week. ASU, BYU, you're high on the Cougs. You're high
BYU,
on ASU.
BYU, man, they're everywhere. They're like Time Cop. They're just jumping around, you know?
Maybe they have two squads, like Bishop Sycamore does, allegedly. Virginia, North Carolina becomes a little bit more interesting. Tulane, with what they showed against Oklahoma early, taking on Ole Miss. Auburn, Penn State, we mentioned earlier on. Utah, San Diego State becomes a little more interesting, with San Diego State comfortably beating Arizona. I have not Tulsa, Ohio State, but Alabama, Florida, who gets snaps at quarterback. Michigan State, Miami, maybe a new rivalry brewing with Notre Dame, Purdue, Interstate, Virginia Tech, West Virginia, Cincinnati, Indiana.
Not bad.
It's deep in terms of, I don't know if this is a snake in the toilet Saturday, but there's something to it.
Something to it Saturday.
Yeah. Yep.
Our early contender. All right, Dan.
Correct.
It's been fun to hang with you early on Sunday morning. We appreciate everyone's support out there. Don't forget to go on out to our website, solidverbal.com, for all of our episodes, as well as all the fine articles that we're posting 3 times a week. Do subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. And of course, you can always email us at solidverbal@gmail.com. For that guy over there, my good friend Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildenbrandt, we will talk to you all in a few very short days and preview week 3. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know, after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. Whoa.
you know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used. Because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.